Over the years, I have worked with a number of startup breweries, and I know there are listeners out there that are either planning a brewery or maybe just recently started a brewery. One of the brands I helped develop was Blaker Brewing in the Central Valley of California, my old stomping grounds. They opened their doors to great success, and it has been fun working with them and watching them grow. There are essential items when it comes to launching your new brand, but I wanted to shed some light on what things looked like after running a brewery for a full year. Having plenty of time to develop your brand before opening your doors is really great, but what happens after things are up and running? Were expectations met around developing the brand? Were there areas that were totally missed? What areas have been the most effective at developing your brewery brand? Tyler Lucas, the Director of Marketing and Brand Development for Blaker Brewing, joins me for this conversation. We get to dig deep into social media marketing, building strong teams, and relationships with your customers. Listen in as we take a look at the first year of Blaker Brewing on this episode of Branding Brews. Thanks for checking out Branding Brews. My name is Ryan, your host, and also the owner of Craft Brew Creative. With over 15 years of experience in branding and design, I am able to bring my knowledge not only to this show, but to great clients that make great beer. From the essentials like websites, labels, tap handles and sales sheets, to merchandise and vehicle wraps, Craft Brew Creative would love to help develop a cohesive and strong brand for your brewery. Craft Brew Creative thrives on delivering value through a collaborative, fun, and interactive design process. Whether you're an existing brewery or a brewery in planning, Craft Brew Creative will be a valuable partner to your team. If you are in need of any design or marketing services, I would love to get in touch. Head on over to craftbrewcreative.com for more information, or just feel free to email me, ryan@craftbrewcreative.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Branding Brews. I'm your host, Ryan Wheaton. I am the founder of Craft Brew Creative. And today I am joined by Tyler Lucas, who would you say you're the marketing director, or what's your position there?
Yeah, director of marketing, director of brand development.
Yeah, so Tyler works for Blaker Brewing, which is happens to be one of my clients. But for this specific episode, I thought it would be cool because, you know, I've worked with them since before they opened their doors, working on their branding and stuff, and it's been great to see them grow. And I think, you know, I wanted to do kind of like a year in review because they just somewhat recently had kind of their first year anniversary mark. And I thought it would be really great to kind of look back at how it got started, you know, what the kind of plans were for the marketing, for the branding, and just kind of see how that all planned out and what changed and what areas, you know, hit the mark on what they were hoping for and what, you know, obviously a lot of that stuff changes quite frequently when you're opening a brewery and opening a business. So, well, cool. Let's start off by, Tyler, why don't you introduce yourself and kind of just give a background about who you are and, how you got to where you're at now.
Yeah, thanks for having me out here, Ryan. Really appreciate it. Like to just first say that it's been extremely fun, at the very least, working with you and highly effective too. I mean, we've done some pretty awesome things over the past year, and I don't think we could do it without you. So, just wanted to say that first and foremost. Before I get going into this, we are a, you know, what we like to think is a farm to tap brewery as close as we can. It's like the grand scheme of things. We've been family farming since 1938. We're out here in the Central Valley of California, and I'm a fifth generation here. My dad and myself and our brewery, we got started home brewing in like 2011. And I was kind of just helping them out, not even of legal drinking age yet, actually. And just helping them brew in the old milk barn. And it was interesting because there's a huge relationship between the brewing process and the ingredients used in the brewing process. And we noticed right away that we kind of had like not only something really, really special to talk about, but something really cool to explore. The farm, we were kind of seeing some changes going in that industry, in the dairy industry. We've been dairying since that 1938 year. So we saw it maybe as an opportunity to explore some other realms, maybe other things that could be a little bit more fun. And so home brewing was just a hobby, and it was getting drank after a fun weekend, you know, just between my dad and some buddies. And I knew I wanted to study business, and he knew that he wanted to continue to brew beer. So he said, well, you know, let's put this to test for over the next 4 years. Let's kind of just think about this thoughtfully, try to expand the product, see if we can get this in front of some people, see if we can put a business plan around it that would ever make sense, and if we can get some type of backing from family to move forward on this idea. So we homebrewed for about a total of 6 years, and we were just brewing in that old milk barn at first on a 5 gallon system that we made, and we were just doing like starter kick recipes, and then started doing some fun recipes that we're making on Beersmith, and then started developing recipes using some ingredients from our own farm. We got to making really good dark beers kind of at first because of the water chemistry. The water out in our wells has a lot of sediments, it's very rich, a lot of things going on in it. So the water chemistry was pretty exciting for dark beers. You could do some dark beers and some nice, thick, full-bodied taste on those beers. So started making good dark ones out the gate, and that was cool to see, get some neighbors down there, get family, friends down there and trying those beers, and just actually getting good feedback from the very beginning.
Nice.
And we brewed plenty of crappy beers. Plenty of crappy beers, that's for sure. But the vanilla bean milk stout, which is one of our main movers right now, that was one of the very first beers that we ever brewed. So, and the recipe is damn near identical on that one. You know, we realized we wanted to do something more legitimate with it. So the Ceres Chamber of Commerce was very welcoming, open armed to us. And they said, hey, you know, you don't have an ABC license. Why don't you guys come out here? You can do tasting events at nonprofit events, get your product out there in the public eye. And I don't think without that we would have been able to do what we've done or even get open in that town of Ceres and create a space for people to come hang out. So the Ceres Chamber of Commerce was extremely helpful in that process and is to this day. I mean, that city's been at our backs the whole time.
Yeah, no, I just want to ask you a question about that. So, I mean, that was kind of part of my first question, which we've been going on, which is great. But yeah, but kind of how you started your brewery and your brand, you know, because I knew you guys had been pouring at events and stuff like that. So maybe for some of the other folks out there that are interested in that approach, because I think it's a great way to start building some awareness of your beer. And if you start developing a brand early on like that. So I'm kind of curious. So you mentioned that the city is called Ceres, so the Chamber of Commerce was really happy to work with you all to get you to be able to pour at events. Like, what did that look like? I mean, if other people were interested in that process, like, and it kind of just like, when did you put a name to it? Also, like, did you start developing a brand? Like, did you put a business plan together first, or did you just be like, let's just start calling it like Blaker Brewing and then work with the Chamber of Commerce and start pouring in advance. I'm kind of interested in that process.
Yeah. So we were thinking of names. You've got a lot of time in between the brewing process, right? And we're just sitting there in that hot old milk barn for, you know, 8 hours from beginning to end. Actually, probably longer than that. You're brewing like 5 gallons of beer and it takes you damn near all day, right? And so had a lot of time to think of some names. So before we really wanted to take it to the next step with, you know, talking to Ceres Chamber of Commerce and pouring under their ABC license, we had thought of some names and actually had done some identity development. What was nice, we did have some financial money, some financials to kind of support this part of the project and like exploring the identity development, exploring the brand development. So it was nice that we were able to do that, or else I don't know if this process would have played out the way it has. But originally we were called Blaker 40 Brewing. So like Blaker, we knew we wanted to talk about that tie to the farm. And Blaker Road is the first 40 acres that we bought a piece of property back in 1930s. So my great-great-grandfather actually bought that piece of property. They came over from Portugal, from the Azores Islands, which is island a series of islands off the coast of Portugal in the middle of the Atlantic. So they came out here, and we knew we wanted to keep that tie. So Blaker Road was that first 40 acres, and we called it Blaker 40, but we didn't realize until having a talk with an attorney that, you know, if you call it Blaker 40 Brewing, you might just cheapen your brand forever, and everybody wants a 40 ouncer of craft beer, right? So we're like, we got to drop that 40. So we're like, Blaker Brewing kind of made the most sense to us. So we were pretty strong with that name and choosing that name before going out into the public. Knowing who we were and knowing what our story was and what we wanted to talk about allowed us to kind of hit the ground running as soon as we got out into the public. We didn't have to think about what our brand story was or what made us different from other breweries or what made us unique in the craft beer industry at all. It was the fact that, you know, we had this rich family farm history, these resources readily available, and a community that has a culture built into that for, you know, the past 5 to 10 generations. So that was kind of the process. We knew what we wanted to call it. We knew what we wanted to be in a broad sense. And we knew that we couldn't get there alone. So once we got to the Ceres Chamber of Commerce and talked to them a little bit, we actually got reached out through Renee Ledbetter. She was running the Ceres Chamber of Commerce at that time and knew her through family friends. And it was just an opportunity that we took advantage of and started doing local events, you know, I'd say within 15 square miles. And that allowed us to showcase our beer in the public's eye. We did that for about 3 to 4 years. And we did not sell $1 worth of beer for about 3 to 4 years.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. We brewed. In that last year before opening, we knew we were opening a brewery. But I'd say in that second to last year before opening, when we were still trying to just validate that we made decent enough beer to be able to open a place where people would actually come drink it. In that last year validating that, we were brewing on a one barrel system probably once a week and not selling a dollar's worth.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was nice to have some type of financial backing. The farm helped us a lot as far as being able to go and get loans with low interest rates. So that's kind of a unique part to our process too, that gave us an advantage in getting out going. But it did take us, you know, a total from beginning phase to opening and having our first customer walk in and legally selling a pint at our establishment. That was about a 6-year process, 7-year process. What it did though was it actually created the perfect amount of build up for our brand to build brand awareness within, you know, I'd say a 30 square radius. Outside of that, nobody knew who we were. Even the majority of people still to this day, like, don't really know who we are outside of 30 square miles.
Right.
But that allowed us to just become familiar, learn about who they were, what they cared about, the things that they cared about within their community. They talk about those things at events with other community members. It was really just a great playing grounds for quite some time, about half a decade, to just understand not only the craft beer industry and community, but that craft beer industry and community in our geographical area. And we learned
absolutely
that there was a real, real big opportunity for that in the Central Valley, because it just had not been tapped into other than, you know, our neighbors Dust Bowl, who have been extremely successful and are going to continue to be successful with what they're doing. They've really paved the way. And on that point, actually, I want to say something. They were extremely helpful in the process and a great helping hand. I mean, having them right down the road, when we first opened up our doors, we had to take our kegs over there and wash them because we didn't have a keg washer set up, but we had to package beer like that week. So they said, come down here. And they had just built their brand new facility on Folkert that had a state-of-the-art keg washer, and they opened their doors, let us come in and use their keg washer. So that was awesome. And I mean, even in the earlier stages in that, we've developed a relationship now with their owners where, you know, if we have a decision to make about business development or bringing on a certain distributor or going into a certain type of account, we're able to just kind of pick their brain, which is super, super helpful.
Yeah. 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 That's awesome, man. Yeah. A couple points I wanted to discuss when you were just talking about there, was that I know some people, I do like go to a lot of beer events, a lot of seminars, you know, like the Craft Brewers Conference or California Craft Summit, or just, you know, I'm always keeping my ear out to marketing and branding type stuff when I'm doing these events or seminars. And I've definitely heard a few times of people that are going to be opening their brewery that are do it maybe in a similar fashion that you did it, where you start pouring your beer at a local events and, or just trying to start building awareness of your beer. And some people question when to start promoting it, like, you know, like creating social media accounts, because what they're afraid of, I think sometimes, is that like they're going to start promoting this beer brand, this brewery that doesn't have a physical location, that's kind of like, and then they're worried about like, oh, are people going to be fatigued because like
building up the hype and then never showing out, right?
Yeah, right, right. Building up the hype and never opening your doors, or like building up the hype and then like in this legitimate like, oh, we're going to open in September. No, wait, we're going to be opening in January. Oh, shoot. No, sorry. We'll be opening in April or whatever, because you know how that goes when you're opening a brewery. But
yeah. Oh, wait. Next year.
Yeah. So like, I'm kind of curious from your perspective, since you did it for, you know, like I think you mentioned a few years, how that kind of went. Like, did you build a social media, you know, like community and like how, and obviously you had the local community at the events you did, and how did they react? Like only seeing you at these events and maybe communicating with you over social media channels, and kind of how did that go for you?
Okay. Yeah. So the first part, I'll talk about like social media integration and kind of like the sweet spot to mix that in. I don't know if we could have done what we were doing for another year. One, financially, and then without opening doors. And then two, I think they would have been fatigued, right? And I kept saying that. I was, you know, kind of pressuring my dad, like, come on, dude, let's do this. They're ready for it. I was always trying to push that, more of an optimist, right? Sometimes more than and he's more of a realist. It's kind of it's a good balance to have.
Yeah.
And I think we were right at that sweet spot to where when we finally did open, after maybe teasing the market, the local market for 4 years, when we hit that, we hit the ground running, that those doors opened and it was packed, and it hasn't really slowed down, other than some months here and there you have some bad months, of course. But I think that sweet spot of teasing, making them want more, making them create that relationship. It wasn't just us putting beer in front of their faces. It and granted, you have to have tasty beer to do this, but it was them continually asking us, when are you going to be open? When are you going to, is this a legit thing? Where are you guys brewing right now? Like, oh, asking about like the farm, because that's the process that we were in right then. So it got people to know for 4 years, like what our roots were, what our history was, what, who we were as people and the brand was, versus like, boom, opening the door, putting a new logo in there, putting a new identity in there, making the interior decor a certain way, and people coming in and trying to learn all of that and understand that, you know, over the course of a month versus 4 years. So It actually played out. I didn't know any of this or realize any of this until, you know, over the past 6 months, I've had time to reflect and understand what's been some tributes to our success. And I think this was honestly one of them. Now, when it came to fielding those questions and keeping that communication with the fans or the people that were growing fond of our beers during that process and the startup process, it was important that we had some type of platform to do so. It couldn't just be at those events, because a lot of those events, depending on, you know, did you have time to do that? Or was the dairy running smooth enough? Because the life of the dairy and the farm is similar to any startup business. It's kind of on demand. If something goes haywire with irrigation or water, you got to make sure you're around or get down there. So schedules are hard to control, but social media, we had to be able to put that in place so we could engage with people. And I'd say maybe right around the point where we knew we wanted to do something legit, like without a doubt, like, I don't know if we're going to be able to, but I know we want to do something more than just a hobby with this. That's when we created social media. So I'd say right around the time we created that relationship with the Ceres Chamber of Commerce, we started putting together Instagram, Facebook pages. Facebook was actually a larger part of our advertising and promotional purposes at the very beginning before starting up, because that's a lot of where our customer base was, you know, older demographics, people that are part of the active community members typically are older than the age of 25 or so, or older than the age of 30. So, and those people like to hang out on Facebook quite a bit more than Instagram, at least 6 years ago, for sure.
Right. So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, now they're starting to get on Instagram quite a bit more. My grandma's on Instagram and she comments on every single photo I put up. So it's, they're right. Getting the hang of it. So yeah, I'd say right around that time, we've been homebrewing for maybe 2 or 3 years, knew we were going to go do events with the purpose of establishing a brand that was eventually going to be a legit business. Created Instagram, Facebook. I didn't introduce Twitter until much later. I still don't use Twitter as effectively as I'd like. I think my Instagram has like 8,000 followers and Twitter has like 100. But yeah, that social media interaction, even now more so than 6 years ago, it's so vital that you do it. It's extremely vital. I mean, social media, I could go down a rabbit hole on this right now, but it's not even getting taken advantage the way it needs to get taken advantage of. Pay for advertisements. Spend $5, spend $10 on every single post you do. Every single post you do. If you can afford it, if you have the marketing budget to do it, if you have basically a tap room location open and you're trying to build awareness within your community, every single thing you post, just throw $5 behind it and target the people within 30 square miles.
Yeah, when it comes to marketing and branding, I think, like, especially for breweries, like, social media is huge. Like, the Instagram world is huge for beer. So, I mean, without getting too crazy into it, I mean, what have you learned about the social media marketing aspects of your brewery?
I like to break it down into three simple topics just because there's so much you can do, but it's capture, create, and distribute content. That's just like the name of the game. Whether that's video, audio, like this podcast, photography, blogs, written content, whatever it may be, events. It's about capturing, creating, and distributing. As much as you can do of that, the better you off. You can't be everything to everybody. And that's not what I'm saying. But you can be a lot of something to a specific amount of people. And you can really create that emotion. It's like pen pals were a thing. People are creating friends now just like through social media. So every single piece of content that you put out there is a chance to build that friendship, right? And that's the way we really think about it. It's not just trying to sell beer or not just trying to get people to come into our place. It's really looking at your social media strategy and how can I grow this relationship with every single one of these individuals and how segmented and personal can I be? And the more you can do that, the better impact and power your content's going to have. And it's going to be able to create deeper relationships.
I've heard this from other brewery owners as well, but like there's a noticeable difference about like if you post about something on social media and people coming into the tap room. And I think you've mentioned that before too, right? It's like if you post something that's going on, then you see people show up, and if you don't, then it can be a slower night. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, it really is. Like it's funny. If they forget you exist if you don't say anything. Because if you're not saying anything, somebody else is. We've got so many things to make decisions for, like where you want to go eat or where you want to grab a beer, that it's easy to forget of the place that you went to last week. It's easy to forget of the place that you thought of going this Thursday and you thought of it on Monday earlier in the week. And then Wednesday, somebody else brings up a different place. You're more likely to probably go to that place because it's the one that was most recently talked about. So if you're not recent, you're not relative. And I try to post multiple times a day, whether it's about what's going on in the tap room or outside. But there is a huge difference and an obvious difference from when I don't post and when I don't create stories as well, talking about like what food I've got going on in the tap room, new beers on tap. All of those things are extremely engaging topics, and it brings people in like that day, literally that day. I think I could, if I don't like bring in some numbers into it, you know, if I don't talk about any food, if I were to not post at all on Instagram or Facebook, not talk about any food, us have been open for the past year and a half now, I think would allow us to get the sales of right around 8,000 to 9,500 if I'd said nothing at all over the course of a week in the tap room. If I said something every day, one thing, I think that's a $4,000 difference. That's the difference between 8,000 and 9,000 and 12,000 on average, I'd say. And that's actually looking at my numbers, Facebook boosted, and that's without boosting those posts. Now, if you throw some money behind those posts, you can turn in a normal pint night. We run a pint night special on Thursday night, $5 pints, where we'll do, you know, an average of maybe 300 to 400 people are coming through there. Maybe not that much, maybe 200 to 300. And if I were to boost it, I'd say it's at least double. The engagement's about triple. Yeah, man, it's extremely important to stay relative in front of the audience's eye, because people are more subjectively loyal than they are objectively loyal. This is kind of a thing I've been talking to a lot of other people in the beer industry when it comes to like marketing and selling beer. I feel like a lot of people right now are more loyal if they don't live within 10 miles of a brewery. They're more loyal to a brewery they're more loyal to a type of beer, like hazy IPAs, for example, and all good hazy IPAs, they'll drink it from any brewery versus one brewery. I'm only going to drink Blaker Brewing beers because they're good. You don't have as many of those type of loyalists versus people who are loyal just to a good type of beer style.
Yeah, I'm glad we spent some time talking about social media. I think that's something that's been proven to be super important for breweries and, you know, for branding as well. But I'd like to kind of talk a bit about, since you've been open for a bit over a year, you know, now you've had some time to kind of like look back at what you planned for and what's been working and stuff like that. So yeah, I'd be kind of just curious to see what your thoughts are on like, what do you think are like the most important elements or strategies for your branding now that you're a year into it?
Yeah, so there's lots of ways that I'd love to attack this question. I guess this is a good time to talk about employee branding. This is the first point I'll come from. Employee branding, I truly believe that in an industry where you're dealing with customers, every good customer experience starts with a good employee experience. And it's easy to talk about these things, but it's so hard to do them. It's extremely hard to execute on them. And, you know, the nature of the beast is just like in any relationship, if you don't keep it exciting, if you don't keep it engaging, it becomes boring, it becomes stale. You know, think of past girlfriends, think of past friends. It's It's the same thing with employees. And so how do you, that perfect balance is how do you empower employees, but not entitle them, you know? So it's wanting them to be engaged. It's wanting them to be motivated. It's wanting them to be excited about what you're doing on the business. But it's also that fine balance between not being able to deliver the needs that they're looking for, right? If we created a culture that that's what we've found ourselves into. We Cultivate Your Craft is our entire brand existence. We've cultivated our craft for the past five generations by farming since 1938, and we cultivate our craft at the brewery by, you know, using fresh ingredients from neighboring farmers and brewing exhilarant beers. And then we support others who cultivate their craft, whether it be through music, art, writing, welding, teaching, whatever your craft is. That's how we make that emotional connection to the public, other than those that are like-minded farmers. And we've built that culture in, you know, that you helped build with us. We built that culture into our employees, and we talked about it early on. And in the honeymoon phase, it was amazing, and it caught on great. And at about 6 months, we realized that people wanted more, and we weren't able to give them more, not necessarily work-wise. They wanted more responsibilities, but with responsibility comes more communication, comes more engagement, comes more stuff for them to eat, absorbs, like, and then do something with. And we didn't necessarily, we weren't ready for that. So we had wanted and asked of people to step up to the occasion. And then once they did, we weren't ready to take them to the next step necessarily. But we realized in order to take, for our business to get to the next step, we had to grow with our employees. And they wanted to know what new beers were coming. They wanted to know what our sales strategy was with certain distributors. They wanted to know these things that you typically wouldn't expect people to care about. And so we had to decide right then, is that something that we want people to care about, or is that something that we don't want people to care about? Because at the same time, I truly believe communication is a cost, but I think that it's a very, very important, vital cost that is key to running your business. I do believe that there is over communication and that not everything needs to be communicated, but at the end of the day, what I believe in most is good employee experiences and a phenomenal work culture. You live where you work, and I don't want, you know, we started the brewery and we did this because we wanted to enjoy our lives. You know, we wanted to be doing what we're doing. That's why you and I are on this podcast right now versus, like, you know, punching a 9-to-5 that I'm not curious to explore any further past
yeah
5 p.m. and before 9 a.m. And so we wanted to embed that culture in our employees, even if that means them leaving us to go to something else that's better or going to start their own thing. We'd love to be that stepping stone. And so it was like, if that's going to be important to us, we have to communicate. We have to talk about these things. We need them to be interested and curious about our sales strategy, even if they're, you know, just doing taproom beer tender shifts, because that goes to show, like, where people want to grow, where they're willing to grow. And when you have that relationship where somebody is ready to support growth and somebody's ready to take on growth, then really, like, it's the sky's the limit. You got Jack and the Beanstalk. And that's something that we've really created here now on purpose. But at that 6 month mark, we had to make a decision because we weren't doing a good job of creating that culture. We were talking about it, and then it was time to actually do it. And that's what has allowed us to get to the mark that we're at right now, where we did over, you know, 1,100 barrels in our first year of production, on pace to do over 2,400 this year. And we've only got two guys in the brew house, one sales guy handling 150 accounts, one marketing guy and four people rotating in the tap room and a delivery guy. So it's a lot of people wearing a lot of hats, but I think that's what is our main secret sauce at Blaker Brewing is the company culture we've built there. It's fun to work with these people. It's fun to be around them. And what we've done there rubs off on the entire community when they walk through those doors, the relationships that we build with distributors, the relationships that we build with accounts when we go into sell our beer. It's so practical that we don't really have to sell or pitch or talk about any of those things because we just talk about, you know, what we ate for breakfast that morning and what we plan to do the rest of the day. And we just go about our business because everybody enjoys the process because they're cultivating their craft. And not that they have to be cultivating, not that their craft that they're cultivating has to be related to beer, you know, but if they're bought into what we're doing, then we're bought into what they're doing as a personal individual. So that's now the thing that we're trying to even dig deeper. I mean, we hired a guy that was in the beer, in the tap room and also back in the cellar, doing work back there. He's now our president because he loves people so much. He's really good at it. He has a great business sense. And he's our president / chief heart officer. I don't know if you've listened to any Gary V podcast, but basically his main job is to work with the employees, the hiring process all the way to the growing process. You know, and if ever came to, you know, the firing process, but it's somebody dedicated to literally growing and managing those relationships in a friendly way.
Yeah.
But also in a tactful way to where we're able to accomplish our goals that we have, you know, I would say that is the most important thing that I've learned over this past year on branding that I wasn't fully aware. And the most important element and strategy that I want to continue to grow, because there's always going to be people and we're always going to need people, especially in a business like this where it's service related and the people that spend money in that industry care about those qualities and that face-to-face interaction, no matter how digital we get with marketing and social media. That experience is going to always be really, really key and permanent to, I think, the craft beer industry. And,
yeah,
you know, so now it's even, we're creating bonus programs and we're creating, you know, different type of compensation packages, a gamification program where people can gain points based off of certain actions that have nothing to do with maybe like what they're supposed to do on a day-to-day basis. But what we're able to do is, you know, we're going to start compensating people for that those actions that are related to cultivate your craft. So it's putting that culture actually into the framework of our employee experience. And I think for every person and every business that can do this and that believes in this, they're going to have, you know, that's the catapult success that you don't know that exists yet. Because when you can really motivate people and create a healthy environment to grow, that's when you start seeing goals that you didn't even like really have planned to hit.
Mm.
Or business opportunities that grow or open up because, you know, one of your taproom people was down at another taproom talking to their brewer and all of a sudden you got a collaboration brew lined up for, you know, a month out.
Right. Yeah. You never know. Like what, I mean, every person that you can touch, like, and create a connection with on like in a positive way and on a personal level, you know, really creates like kind of like, I kind of hate this buzzword, but like a marketing, like kind of like a branding, like evangelist, you know? But it's true. I mean, if I look at the interactions I've had with breweries that I've worked with in the past, not in like a design and working relationship, but just like maybe with a certain events or stuff like that I've worked with, those people that I've got to know, like I've become much more, I have much more of like an affinity for their brand and for their beer and for their breweries. So, no, I think that's super important what you're just talking about, like, you know, because what those employees are, they're just going to go out and like they bleed out into the community and about your brand and just kind of, you know, evangelize what you've got going on. So yeah, it's super important.
Yeah, man, it really is the, it's all the excess on the top. It's a difference between, you know, breaking even and building a business that's profitable because it's just a great place to be and just a great thing to be a part of. And so we've really tried focusing on that, you know, and cultivate your craft. When you and I were developing this brand of Blaker Brewing, and, you know, we talked about our core values of friendship, ingenuity, craftsmanship, and sustainability. And those four core values decide and guide every decision that we make in this business, whether it's who to bring on in on as a distributor, what accounts to go and target and try to sell beer to, what types of people we want to create relationships and what types of people we want to be working with us. And it's just, when we were developing that identity and that purpose, we didn't really know to what extent it was going to bleed into. And it's really bled into all aspects of the business. You know, we weren't just creating a packaging label and a logo and our core values, just words on a piece of paper at that time. So it's just really neat to see that all come together and to go back and to be able to point back at four simple definitions and one phrase that literally makes this thing click like clockwork.
Yeah.
It's those four core values and that shared purpose of cultivate your craft. And that's literally what guides this entire thing. It's what has fueled the employee fire, which has allowed us to, you know, brew the amount of beer we have with the amount of people we have and sell the amount of beer we have with the amount of people we have. And it's what has created that connection between us and the community coming through the tap room like they do on a regular basis. And it's what's given us that extra perceived value to our brand. I mean, just think about it. Like, when a brand seems like friendly and inviting and warm to you, there's a perceived uptick in that value versus like, oh, those guys are dicks over there. I don't want to do business with them. Right. So it's,
yeah,
like, all those little things come together at the end of the day, but it's really cool to look back and look at, you know, we were just putting words on a piece of paper and doing some cool identity logo designs, but it's grown into so much more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just having an interaction with somebody on Twitter. There's a tap room. That's a local tap room that's closing here in Portland. And, you know, the kind of idea, Portland is such a saturated market that, you know, and so like beer centric. And so there's a lot of discussion and community around the beer here. And so like when a tap room closed, the idea of like, well, why did it close? You know, like what was the reasons behind it? You know, and then we started, and then the gentleman started discussing other tap rooms and what was appealing about those, you know, and, you know, there's tap rooms that just have, you know, corrugated steel and lots of like reclaimed wood, and, but they just feel hollow inside. They don't, you know, so the idea of like where they were at in the community, the people that were, you know, the patrons, but also I think most importantly is the people that are there, like that work there, that the staff and the owners. And so, you know, I think what I took away from that was just that, like, you know, really it is that community. It's the people that work there. Like, you go in, if you feel like welcomed and inviting and like friendly, and it makes it warm. It makes it feel like a place you want to go back to. So I think that's kind of spot on to what you were just talking about. And I think it's hugely important, because otherwise, yeah, you can go into anywhere, and if people are not cool, and maybe the patrons are like, no, also not cool, but most importantly, like the staff or the owners, you go in, they're not cool. It's just like, doesn't feel warm and inviting. So, which is definitely going to shed a pretty negative light on the brand. So,
right. I mean, I think we've all been in that like weird dive bar that you just Googled on Yelp that somehow had like almost five stars, but oddly enough, it was in like the bottom of a, you know, Quality Inn hotel.
And yeah,
it's like they don't even want your business. You go in there and there's balloons and birthday streamers, like they're having a party, and there's four people at the bar and they all look at you and turn around and like, dude, what the hell are you doing here? Get out of here. Mm-hmm. And you know, so the last thing you want to be is that, right? But that's a very extreme like example. But to your point, man, there's, as much as we talk about creating a family experience and, you know, friendship and community and having that great customer experience, that's one of the most our reviews most commonly are related by like great staff, great service. They're so friendly, great experience. I came in there, they treat me like family. But then the only actually very bad reviews, which it's rarely related to the beer. It's rarely related to, you know, the experience of it being too hot or cold. It most always is related to the very opposite of good service, you know, of like feeling like they're family. It's people feeling like they're an outsider because they noticed how well of a connection the beer tenders had with other people in the tap room, and that they didn't give them the same type of service.
Yeah.
So we've recently had to have the discussions with our tap room, and our manager's done a really good, phenomenal job of creating this like culture in there of like just awesome customer service and also being educated on the beer. But now we've had to kind of go back and say, hey, like this place is awesome now because what we've done over the past 12 months has been meeting entirely new people, treating everybody with respect and care. And now that we've been open for 12 months, you start to figure out, okay, who's really nice, who comes back often, but is, you know, possibly annoying, who comes back often is I love talking to every time, who never comes back and I wish they came back more, right? You have all these types of different customers.
Yeah.
Different and different levels of loyalty and frequency. And so you start engaging with them differently because you know what type of engagement they want when they come into your building. Now, when you have it's all these reoccurring customers, it's hard to see the new faces sometimes because you're talking to a lot of the same people, and it's good to build those relationships. But now we've got to continue to build that same type of effort with the people that are coming in the door every day. Right now, we have about 50 new customers on average every day that we're open. Just tracking our new credit cards that come through our POS system. That's not even looking at cash paying customers. So
right.
That aspect of delivering that same customer service to those people is going to be key for us to grow. Yeah, the same people could continue to spend more money, but on average, they're going to spend the same amount of money that they do right now. So your business couldn't really grow if you never got new customers, right? And that's what we're really redeveloping in the tap room right now. But it's interesting that you bring that up, because as much as that we don't want to be that, if you are too micro focused with who you're treating like that, you can completely be that.
Yeah, no, yeah, you can make it. It becomes, you don't want to be too clicky, you know, like if you feel like you're not a part of that click, then that's a big turnoff as well. So, right. You have to be openly friendly, like and inviting to everybody in equal ways. Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a super good point. Cause I've also felt that as well. I've gone somewhere where I didn't feel like I was part of that like click that was at that location. I'm like, oh man, they've got their regulars and like, I don't fit in there. So I'm not going back. So that's very important. That's cool.
Right. Even if their tap room was cool looking and they had good customer service, but they just kind of went, they didn't go the extra mile, right? They gave you good customer service and that's what they did. You know, but if you notice that they gave that extra customer service to others, that's what would possibly make you, you know, it could be a turnoff in a way too, if it's obvious, right? So it's like
exactly,
you know, roundabout way, you become the thing that you hate. Like, if you're not aware of it as a group or as a company.
So when we, and you know, this is a kind of a starting off point to kind of help people know our relationship, and how I've helped you before you opened your doors. But, so before, you know, I'd say it was maybe like 8 months or so before you opened your doors, we developed, we kind of did a bit of a rebranding. We took some stuff you had existing when you were doing your, pouring at events and stuff, and, kind of looked, did some kind of core branding and decided like who you were, and kind of developing the Cultivate Your Craft and idea a bit. And then we developed a logo and kind of brand identity system, with some colors and some brand like identity logo system. And then we developed, I think it was like 3 can labels to start off with. And I think we developed the tap handles, for your accounts that were going to be pouring your beers, kind of as the stuff that you had when you opened your doors. So I just wanted to kind of set that as where you had started in regards to your branding and design work, leading into this question. So then if you were to go back, before you opened, during your planning stages, like, would you have done anything different in regards to how you planned and prepared for your marketing and branding before you opened your doors?
Well, what I can say, so I think I have like 2 answers to this. And I don't know if either of them necessarily answers it fully, but
sure.
The first part is, you know, about those design assets and those brand assets that we created, both digital and some physical as well, like the tap handles. Us getting ahead of that and knowing, because I think we had, you know, maybe, I know some elements came later, like the tap handle was maybe the last design.
Yeah.
Brand asset that we kind of created. We've worked on plenty of things obviously since then, but as far as the initial brand launch, us being that time for 4 years where we were validating our brand at events and nonprofits with the Ceres Chamber of Commerce, and knowing that we were going to be opening a place and then developing that relationship with you, creating a brand that we felt proud of. No, we knew what we designed with you like represented us exactly how we imagined. And a year and a half later, I still feel the exact same, even more so. And it's from the logo to the brand packaging to the core values and the talking points that I was able to create, you know, for the sales and marketing communications that were in parallel with the brand visual identity. That's what allowed us to come out the gates and can beer our first month of being open. And that's what allowed us to start selling beer the way we did, literally from day one. If we didn't have those things, we would have looked like, you know, the little dinky brewery opening up in town that's not legitimate, that's not going to be able to reservice my accounts, that's not going to be able to produce the beer and drop it off when I need it. We would have looked like that had we not had, you know, the sales sheets put together, had we not had, you know, that walking with the tap handle designs, walking in with, you know, a really sleek looking packaged beer. People were like, oh, how long have you guys been open for? I've never heard of you. They're expecting us to say like a few years because of just our
business.
And we go, oh, like, you know, a few months. What? You're already canning? You guys are fucking crazy. You know, so like people were saying, well, you're ridiculous. Why would you do that? You're going to turn your business upside down, like getting into all these investments and, you know, canning and stuff like that. But I mean, we're with can vans, so financial investment wasn't a thing we really had to worry about on a canning line. But getting that brand identity developed literally shot us out the gates running because we looked legit when we started building those relationships. We looked like we'd been doing it a while when in reality we had no idea what the hell we were doing at all.
Right.
And we've learned since, and we still don't know what the hell we're doing. You know, we're learning as every day as we go. It's constantly changing when it comes to like the buyer behavior market and the social norms of the craft beer industry and just how people, what types of beers their industry they're interested in, what type of packaging they're attracted to. Like all of that changes so fast right now that branding and design strategy, as well as like marketing strategy, is rapidly changing too. So it's really hard to say like what I would change, because I think we developed our brand. We developed a brand to the extent that we knew it of what it was. And the parts that we didn't know, we didn't try to develop. So we've gotten to a point now to where we believe and stand for, you know, our core values and cultivate your craft and the brewery to farm relationship, to keep it simple. And past that, we haven't further developed, because the market's going to tell us how to create and build those connections through, you know, the stories with people. So there's nothing that, you know, I wouldn't go back and say, oh, I would have done this and added this part of the process or done this. The only thing that I can say I would have for sure done different is I would have maybe done another rendition of Tap Handles.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I would have maybe done that. Other than that, like, I think branding wise, we developed everything that we knew was concrete further enough. And the things that we didn't 100% know, we told ourselves, we don't know this. Let's keep our eyes up and our ears to the ground and kind of just like see what the playing field tells us. And we'll react towards mm-hmm. that. And we'll get better and better at reacting to where eventually we're not reacting and we're the ones initiating action and making the industry react. So yeah, I think that's kind of my long-winded answer to that. Marketing-wise, I would have done even more with social media. There's so many things that I want to post and want to put into place that I don't get around to. I have so much content just sitting in a hard drive that does not get posted. Beautiful videos, beautiful photos. They just don't get up because I don't have either the time or there's other things that I have to do that kind of interfere with that. At the end of the day, it's just excuses. So it's like, that's the one thing that I would do different. Whether that means me getting and moving money aside to be able to hire a person to handle that, or me getting somebody else in place to handle the things that are keeping me from doing that. I would have done that earlier on to push even more content.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense, right? And that's hard when, like you said, everybody's wearing multiple hats and you only have so many resources, but the definitely valid point. And I think just to jump back really quickly on the tap handle thing, I think this can happen easily, is that sometimes people don't know. And I think the situation that you were in, people don't necessarily know that it can take 5, 4, 5, or 6 months to develop a completely custom tap handle. So if I recall correctly, I think we kind of had to find a situation where we could develop something that was pretty custom, but that was made out of wood, so that they would be able to be made locally and get something done in like 2 months. So that's, I think, something for new brewers out there to keep be aware of, that you know, creating a custom tap handle can take a decent amount of time. But there's other options doing it out of like wood, and there's some other local manufacturers that you can find that could get something out the door in like, 4, 6 weeks or 8 weeks versus going to like 6 months. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of like another point I would like to make, is just everything doesn't need to be perfect, you know, and like feel good enough about what you've got going into the market. And as long as you believe in the story that you're telling, then you're golden. You know, if you believe in what you're telling and you have good product to back you up and an awesome branding person to work with like Ryan Wheaton, then you're golden. Because all those other things can change. That's what I would have done different. I would have gotten generic tap handles, because since we designed those handles, you know, I've gone back and I've created completely different new custom tap handles that are about to arrive at the end of this month. So I've even changed them since you and I designed those ones, right? And it's the ones that I'm getting now, that was like a 8-month process from beginning to end.
Right.
That was like an extremely long process. But these tap handles, I know they're not going to change. You know, I hope they never change. They'll change when they become out of style, which hopefully is not for like, you know, 10 plus years.
Right. Yeah. You never know what the beer market these days, but hopefully, right. Yeah, hopefully it'll be a long time.
Right. I hope they were innovative enough. They make noise. Yeah. They make noise.
So that's something.
Yeah. They don't light up or anything like cool shoes, but they make noise.
Yeah. There you go.
But yeah, I would have invested in a generic tap handle at the beginning just to get out of the gates and focused on my sales strategy rather than my sales presentation, if that makes sense. And I would have focused more on the nuts and bolts and building those relationships rather than having a perfect, pretty tap handle right out of the gates. So yeah, because I didn't think, I thought the tap handle that we were going to be designing at the beginning stages was going to be the tap handle forever. But that's just something that you don't know at the beginning. So it's like plan for the unexpected and plan for change and set yourself up for change. So make sure you manage your money in that way as well when it comes to like brand assets. Know that you may not be in love with everything visually, but as long as you nail down the concrete information that identifies your company as your company, like your core values and your purpose and the things that guide your actions, everything after that, it comes together. And when you have something visually that you love and kicks ass and that people love, you'll know. The market will tell you.
Yeah. Well, man, I think that's a great note to end on, dude. Super appreciate your time. And this is great kind of taking a look back at how things have gone. And it's been a real pleasure and a lot of fun working with you all. How can people... is there anything else you might want to tell the folks out there in regards to Blaker Brewing and like where they can find you if they want to learn more about Blaker?
Yeah, we are in the Central Valley of California in Ceres. It's a town about 45,000 people nestled between Modesto and Turlock. If you're ever in the area going down the 99 or crossing through the 120 from the Bay Area over, just pop in to our tap room. We're opening up actually a second tap room in Atwater on the Castle Air Force Base. That is just south of us right now by about 30 miles on the 99, just north of Fresno and Merced area. But keep your eyes out for our pretty cans designed by yours truly, Ryan Wheaton. Hope to be... making plenty more beer for years to come and doing more podcasts with you. And I know we're going to be doing lots more branding work and I'm excited for that.
Awesome. Well, this is great, man. Again, appreciate your time. And I think we've had some valuable insights to share. So thanks for that again. And we'll be in touch again soon.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Ryan, for having me out, man. This was fun.